Welcome to the Marketing Technology Data Lab, living at the intersection of all things MarTech, analytics, culture, and beyond. Learn about the technologies, tools, and processes that will unlock a new stage of growth for your organization without losing sight of the people that drive the change. Here is your host, Samuel Eiten.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to the MarTech Data Lab. I'm your host, Samuel Eiten. And today we are joined by John David Arianson. He's currently the co-founder of Servotone Analytics and the director of analytics of there as well. And he has been able to promote and build himself as an educator and an expert in the data visualization space. In fact, he's recently launched some courses on Udemy focused on Tableau for Business and also Microsoft Excel to Tableau. And he is going to be launching new courses also on LinkedIn Learning as well, also on data visualization and Tableau. So I thought he'd be a perfect fit for us to have him on our podcast and for us to learn a lot more about data analytics and data visualization and MarTech from one of the main masters that I know of data visualization himself. So John David, thank you and welcome to the program.
Yeah, thanks for having me on, Sam. I appreciate it.
Yeah. And I also know John David as well. And this is a shout out to one of my other podcast guests, Chris, who also runs the Raleigh-Durham Tableau user group. So I also know John David locally as well. And also, it really goes to show you just how amazing of a network in your own backyard. You might even have experts in anything data analytics and visualization related. All you have to do is just look a little bit. So that's something that I highly recommend to do if you haven't had the time or the opportunity to do that. But with that, let's kick it off. So I'd love to hear a little bit from you, John David, about your role at Servotone, and then also some of your recent endeavors in entrepreneurship, and then also just how you've been able to create so much amazing content focused on data visualization.
Yeah, sure. That sounds great. So Servotone Analytics is a consulting agency that's made up of me and two business partners. So the first business partner is a fractional CEO. So what's kind of cool about that is he'll come in and basically flip a company like you flip a house. Mm-hmm. And oftentimes he's found that they are completely data illiterate. And that's one of the major things that we really plug in together well, because not only is he doing his job better, but then we have some, you know, recurring income that can come from that. And I mean, it's wild that these companies, you know, some of them are like 100 million in revenue, mm-hmm. and are data literate. So we can come in and have these massive impacts, like tens of millions of dollars on something that's just very, very simple. Mm-hmm. And then the second partner is Ryan Forrest, and he is the chief fungi at Fungi Marketing. He's a big fan of puns, obviously.
Fun guy as in F-U-N guy, or fungi as in a mushroom?
Yeah, F-N-U-G-I.
Okay, got it.
Yeah, he's a pretty quirky guy.
Yeah.
Actually, one of his marketing campaigns was that he sent them his potential client spores and was like, let's grow together.
Wow. All right. Well, that is one way to have viral marketing, right?
So. Right. Which that was just kind of a tongue in cheek. But
yeah, right.
He's actually like an expert in marketing data. Mm-hmm. So he's been in the marketing space for about 10 years, and his thing is data-driven marketing. So I'm kind of like the vector point that kind of ties it all together. And it's interesting because I have been labeling myself as a Tableau specialist, mm-hmm. but I'm now kind of evolving more into just an analytics expert. Or an analytics generalist. I'm still kind of working mm-hmm. through how I'm branding myself, but my specialty is data. So it applies to marketing. It applies to, you know, kind of C-level executives' job functions. And I kind of go and do the heavy lifting as far as just bringing the data all together. So a lot of times, you know, I'm breaking down data silos, and data governance is a huge part of what I do. Just identifying, okay, what are your goals? Okay, you have your goal. Now, what are the KPIs? And then back into, this is the data that we need to track to get to your end goal. So that's Servotone in a nutshell. And then on the side, about a year and a half ago, I started a YouTube channel on just kind of vlogging about my experience as an analyst. Mm-hmm. And I started to, this is interesting because I actually started teaching myself about search engine optimization and keywords through my own YouTube channel. Mm-hmm. So,
it's one of the best ways to learn. Just do it yourself. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Which is, it's interesting as an educator telling other people of like, you don't really need me. You just need a project, you know?
Yeah. Hey, but as an educator, you can help focus them and drive them and then kind of build the vision for what they need.
Right. I think that's a big part of it is helping them envision what that future could be.
Right.
But, I was one of the people who took the Tableau certification and the desktop specialist. I was probably within the first month of that coming out. And then what I did, which was, I didn't realize how big of a deal this was at the time. I made a YouTube reviewing the test. And then I started ranking number one on that search term. So I just looked it up today. There's like 85,000 searches a month on YouTube for Tableau certification. And I'm showing up number one there.
Yeah. That's a great lead generator for you.
Right. And then I made those videos for another, 6 or 8 months, releasing them every Monday. And I thought, I'm getting all this traffic. What's the next step? How can I monetize this? And I thought, well, why don't I build out a desktop specialist certification course on Udemy? And now I have a link to my course on that video. So I'm having, I have these digital assets that are just generating leads and passive revenue for me now. Mm-hmm. So that's on the Udemy side. Recently, LinkedIn has, I've caught their attention and they found a couple of my courses and they recently flew me out to California and I recorded in studio for them. So I'll have 6 courses coming up on LinkedIn Learning over the next 2 or 3 months.
Yeah, and that is fantastic. And what courses are those going to be around? I know, are they going to be more about Tableau specifically or data visualization or just generally kind of being an analyst?
I feel like I should not tell you this.
Okay, and hey, if we can't talk about it yet,
okay. No. I'm gonna be honest. Okay. So they flew me out there and I had 3 courses in mind. So there's going to be a general analytics 101 course, which that blows my mind that there's no business analytics fundamentals course on LinkedIn Learning right now, but that's going to be me. Mm-hmm. That's going to be huge. And then a Tableau course and then a couple of data source courses. Then I get out there and they're like, hey, we didn't really like the Power BI guy that we found. Can you teach yourself Power BI and teach these courses on it? So while I was out in California, I was recording and also learning Power BI and teaching and writing a course on it. Mm-hmm. Which, I mean, it's since I know Tableau relatively deep, it's just kind of figuring out where the buttons are on Power BI. But also Power BI and Tableau have slightly different slants on how they approach data analysis. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to have 1 course on general analytics, marketing data source course, sales data source course, 1 Tableau course and 2 Power BI courses coming up on LinkedIn.
Great. Well, so one thing that you mentioned that I think does pique my interest is, it is surprising to me that LinkedIn at this point doesn't have kind of a analytics 101 course in terms of kind of learning about analytics. And I know that there are courses that are probably focused maybe more on how to use Google Analytics or how to use Adobe Analytics or how do you maybe use some analytics tools. It may be not so much about the principles of analytics. So how are, without giving too much away from the course, I think it would be really fascinating to hear a bit more about how you tend to approach analytics and really also what kind of analytics means to you. Because I think for some people, analytics might mean, put a whole bunch of data scientists into a room, make sure the data scientists have PhDs. And then once you cram them in there, have them try to solve really difficult problems in a vacuum, and then they come out and then they solve something and then they change the whole entire world. Or analytics could be to a marketer, I know how to look at Google AdWords campaign and my Google Analytics data. And then to them, that is analytics. So in a field that is so broad, how do you really define analytics and, really try to approach how to help people understand it?
Yeah, that's a really good question. So I guess my approach to it, it is such a broad umbrella. You mm-hmm. kind of need to anchor it. So my anchor in that course is, and that's kind of like, now that it's almost like writing a diary. It's like, mm-hmm. I'm starting to kind of
dear data diary.
Yeah, I'm starting to shape like my own trajectory, own vision myself. I anchor it down on you want data driven decisions, or actually, I have a specific video on this of the difference between data informed. I mean, technically, you want data informed decisions. Mm-hmm. You want to mix your intuition and your deep knowledge of your industry with what the data is telling you, but because you don't want it to be robotic. The data says this, so I'm going to do this, because there are sometimes, you know, unquantified variables, and sometimes there are data quality issues. So you want to mix the two, and you want to make the right decision because you are informed by your data. Mm-hmm. And to kind of back into that, there are three phases of analysis. So there's descriptive, prescriptive, and predictive. I should say in a different order. There is descriptive, predictive, and prescriptive.
Okay.
I focus on just descriptive.
Okay.
So it technically should be the business fundamentals of descriptive analytics. And that's, you know, you're looking back at historical data to help understand, you know, what's worked in the past. We do a lot of, you know, Pareto analysis. Mm-hmm. And then within descriptive analytics, there's really three steps. So there is data governance, there's data analysis, and then there is data informed decision making. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I mean, I guess that's kind of like layers upon layers of thinking, but I mean, I really had to like write it out and kind of get my thoughts all together. But I think that gives you some bumpers to really think about it from a business owner's perspective. That was kind of what I was writing it for, because initially it was business analytics for small businesses. Mm-hmm. But then they realized, look, there's not even one for big business.
Yeah.
And I mean, it kind of, the same concepts kind of apply all the way up, you know? I mean, even if you have like a data science team, if you don't have properly tracked data, then I mean, it's all for naught.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So do you feel like there is a difference in terms of when you talk about data, when you talk about it with someone that is an executive versus someone that is maybe starting to grow or build their career in data, in terms of how you talk about and how you approach analytics? Do you feel like there's a big difference?
Yeah. Well, I mean, if I'm talking to a CFO or a CEO, I'm not going to tell them, you know, here's the minutia of all the analysis that I've done, and here are all my thoughts. I'm going to tell them, you need to do X, then it's going to be worth $200,000. Mm-hmm. You know, and then if they push back on it, you know, then I can start to get into justifying my recommendation. But if I'm talking to someone who is trying to learn analytics, yeah, I'll get a little bit more tactical. I guess that's a good dichotomy. With C-level and business owners, I'm getting more strategic. When I'm teaching someone about it, it's more tactical.
Mm-hmm. And when you're, I know you have those three different stages of understanding analytics. Mm-hmm. What do you see as some of the biggest challenges that either you've encountered with your own clients within those stages, or just challenges that you sometimes see in a somewhat daily basis that keep coming up over and over again in any one of those three stages?
Oh, for sure. The biggest problem I'm seeing is data governance. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, when I was working...
How do you define data governance?
So data governance, I mean, think about how we, you know, in America, we have a government, and it's kind of like a system of laws and ordinances that kind of make things run smoothly.
Mm-hmm. At least that's the idea. So.
Yeah, right. I mean, you know, I mean, a lot of the same problems with government that apply to data governance.
I know, yeah.
But so the idea is that you want to cultivate the data and collect it. So a lot of times... with these huge organizations, they have legacy systems. So you have an old legacy system, and then they just strap on a new type of data source, and then they strap on a new type of data source in another department. And these, you know, these additions don't really communicate with each other. Mm-hmm. And that's a huge problem. Fortunately, I don't really work with too many billion-dollar companies. So that's not really my problem. But, you know, if I'm teaching someone and they want to go work for, you know, one of the big banks, they're going to need to know, you know, that's kind of how it works in the, you know, bigger organizations. But with smaller companies or even newer companies, there are systems that automatically will track data. So for instance, if you're using Stripe or Clover, to process your payments. They collect all your data and all you have to do is download it to Excel and then you can start to do some analysis. Mm-hmm. So in a weird way, if you're a brand new company and you do a little bit of research, you can actually have somewhat of an advantage of these huge companies because your data is going to be tracked. And you know, using something like Clover, that data is going to be tracked pretty much perfectly unless there's, you know, maybe some error in the system.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's a good point that you bring up about the comparison of some older legacy companies. And I know even at the top of the podcast, you're mentioning sometimes there's these really large organizations that you think could already have really nailed down their whole entire data infrastructure. And even if it's a, you know, very forward-thinking technology company, even those are the ones that you tend to see over and over again. Even not really either one, they have their data that is completely siloed, or they really struggle with even the basics of kind of having, you know, like a data democracy, being able to really democratize that information and be able to not just democratize the information, but also be able to talk about the different insights that can be brought, you know, throughout the whole entire organization too. Because I think there's also a pretty big difference between, you know, information and then also insights, or the same thing too, you know, with data analytics. And then also, like, you know, what makes an actual insightful point of data versus just data to have data. And so I think, yeah, are there any things that when it comes to understanding the, you know, how, what could make a good data point insightful? How do you kind of help someone kind of guide in that direction when if they do have access to a giant mountain of data and they really aren't even sure what they're looking for in terms of trying to find that needle in a haystack, how would you help them kind of, you know, approach that problem and to really help them kind of to see what they need to see?
Mm-hmm. I think the key here is to know the right questions to ask.
Yeah.
So what's your goal? Are you in the sales department? Do you want to grow your sales trends? Or, I mean, are you in the supply chain and do you want to minimize your costs? So if you start there, then you can start to back into, okay, well, my KPI for, you know, growing the goal of growing my sales trends is total sales. Mm-hmm. Well, then I can start to break that down into, well, maybe we could look at deal size and then days to close. Maybe those could be our KPIs on a dashboard. And then we could look at, okay, well, maybe there are different dimensions of those three KPIs that might, you know, suss out some insights. So we could look at different categories, maybe different times of the year, or even geography. So like kind of rooting down on that question, backing into the KPIs, and then starting to kind of dissect those KPIs into different dimensions. I think that's really where the insights come in. And it actually happened to me last week. I did this exact process with a company that does, they hired me on to increase their sales trends. And what was kind of interesting is that they thought the bigger the client they had, the bigger the deal size. Mm-hmm. And what we found out was that that's not the case. In fact, so I did that exact process. I broke it down into total sales, deal size, and then time to close. And then we broke it down into different categories, size of company, and a few other different visualizations. And this was on Tableau, so any of the visualizations we could use to slice through the data. So what we did was we broke them down into different sizes of company. And we figured out that the biggest company was, they were actually spending twice as much time, but the deal size was a third of the size as the second biggest category. So that right there can help focus their sales and marketing efforts. And that could be worth, you know, who knows? You know, I mean, it's still pretty early in the project, but I mean, I think that, I hope that narrative kind of gave you an idea of how you can start to find some of that clarity.
It did. Yeah, it did. I know that is, I think, a process that is, no matter what vertical you're working in or no matter the size of your organization, I think that process can end up serving you very well, because understanding the question and then thinking about the goal of really what you're trying to achieve. And then also, I think, you know, really also thinking about the propensity to action. So even if you spend a lot of time and you are able to pull together an analysis, You also have to, at least in my mind, one of the things I always like to think about is how likely is, let's say, if you give an insight or you give some information to someone, how likely do they actually have an opportunity to or a willingness to even act on that data? And if it tends to be high, then I think that could be a powerful way to also, you know, really try to dive deeper and to understand the real truth for them. If not, then I think sometimes it's a bit, you know, you have to ask. You can have that data, but then that data sometimes just stays as information. It doesn't become an insight, and then sometimes that insight gets stuck there, and then it doesn't always become, you know, action. So I think that that other step of really driving action forward, in my experience, I've also seen to be some at times a very difficult one, because you know, there is so much culture and so many things that kind of go into that as well.
So I think a key point in that process has to deal with power dynamics. Mm-hmm. So in this situation, Gary brought me in as the CEO of that company. So we had the power to make that final decision, mm-hmm, because he was at the helm and I was seen as the expert that's going to help take them to the next level. You know, I think that a lot of my students are coming in at entry-level jobs, and I think a lot of the managers or the people above them are a little bit skeptical of the quality of the recommendation.
Right.
This is kind of a topic that I'm just kind of feeling out. It's just kind of entering my radar. But I think that there needs to be some more focus and education on the soft skills related to analytics, and power dynamics is a big part of that. Mm-hmm. Like you need to sell yourself as the expert, and there needs to be some authority. Like you can't have a very passive tone. I mean, you don't want to be, you know, coming in and like dictating,
sure, them, right?
But you need to speak with confidence and some authority, and they're going to take your recommendation. I think there's a difference. I was talking with one of my MBA buddies recently about passive tone, and how if it's like the difference between, well, I was thinking about maybe doing this versus I'm going to do it.
Right.
Right. It's if a lot of new analysts are entering the marketplace and I don't think they've had that interaction with, I mean, it is kind of an interesting dynamic when you're telling someone above you what they should do.
Yeah. And I think that's the challenge that I have seen with data, is because if you're talking to an executive or you're trying to let the data actually be the one that drives your decisions and drives your thinking, I think that typically requires a pretty big act of vulnerability, because what that's saying is that, hey, I don't know the answer. You don't know the answer. We don't necessarily know the answer. Let's use the data to help guide our thinking. And I think that act of vulnerability is sometimes incredibly difficult for either certain people to do or certain teams to do. And I've seen it time and time again, is that that can be one of the biggest reasons that even if if it's kind of differentiating also, I think, between reporting and then analytics. You know, are you reporting because mm-hmm. you're just publishing and, you know, giving someone data and they're asking for the data? Sometimes they just want the data to confirm everything that they're thinking. And if the data does not confirm that, then they say, it's not important, or it's not valid, or it's not quality data. And I also, unfortunately, have seen that time and time again.
Confirmation bias.
Yeah, right. And that's, you know, I think people are people. They're still susceptible to the same things before they potentially had all the answer at their fingertips. And now that I think the issue isn't necessarily getting the data, but it's understanding it and knowing what to do with it. This is where I think kind of the skills that you're describing and also the courses that you're teaching, I think, are very much needed in today's field.
Well, what's a little frustrating is that the soft skills are very necessary, mm-hmm. but the feedback I'm getting from my students is that all they want to do is focus on the hard skills. Mm-hmm. So I could make a course on how to become an influential analyst, but I don't think anyone would buy it at this point because they don't understand, they don't have a mental model to think through that.
Right.
And I mean, that may be something that I kind of suss out through teaching, is kind of how to get them to think outside of their analyst mind frame. Mm-hmm. So I came from sales before I went back to get my MBA. So I think like a salesperson. I think about, you know, I take the other person's perspective, kind of weigh that out. And then I keep that in mind when I'm making a recommendation to them. You know, what do they want? Mm-hmm. I mean, this is just a little bit of a tangent, but it's something I've been thinking about is the soft skills of analytics. And it's not sexy. It's not like, you know, building out an algorithm in Python that's predictive mm-hmm. and is, you know, super innovative and edgy. But that algorithm may move the overall KPIs an inch forward, but you might spend 2 weeks on it. I mean, that's something I see with analysts often is that I think they let their ego do some of the driving and they get hyper technically specific instead of, you know, kind of not necessarily playing the politics game, but working on that other mm-hmm. psychological side of it. Because you're in a hierarchy that involves people and you need to know how to navigate that.
I could not agree more. And I think two initial thoughts are also coming to my mind. One is there is one of my favorite books that is by an author called Daniel Pink, and it's called To Sell as Human. And
yeah, I've read that one.
Yeah. And that one I think is a really, you know, in my own analyst career, I think no matter who you are or, you know, what you're trying to do, you are basically trying to sell. And whether you're trying to sell an insight or you're trying to sell access to get that technology or you're trying to sell that tool or technology, you know, I think being able to sell either yourself and then also the vision, I think is a very critical skill. And when the other thought that I also had as you were talking is how oftentimes I think people, I know you're mentioning this as an analyst that kind of needs to work on their soft skills, but I think also just people will tend to focus when you think about, like, you know, the pillars of people, process, and technology, people oftentimes put the tool first. So like that piece of marketing technology, whether it's an analytics software or a visualization software or whatever it might be, that if you get that, that will solve all your problems. And, you know, what I tend to find is that it's a tool and it is exactly what it says. And tools tend to, I believe, amplify the culture that currently exists. And if you have a tool that is really not really designed for its purpose, or you're trying to use it to compensate for the culture of not being able to accept or ask questions or not being vulnerable or as you mentioned, not really being able to influence other people, then I think it's going to be very difficult to be able to continue to not only grow your career, but also it'll be difficult, even if you do master and learn all about all those different technologies or ways to be able to process data, it'll be hard to really share your results. And I think that's where there could still be a pretty big gap sometimes.
Yeah. Well, and you know, let me preface this with, I'm coming from a very privileged position when I'm coming into these companies because they're hiring me as a subject matter expert.
Sure.
And they're paying me big dollars compared to the analyst that's in-house with them. So it's this weird power dynamic that develops where it's like, he's the expert, I'm going to take his advice, to where I think what happens, like, well, I never worked for a big company. I did intern there, but I've been in that position where you were just told what to do. You're kind of mm-hmm. turned into like a report monkey.
Yeah.
You know, just get me this. But you have no idea of the overall strategy.
Right. No context and really, yeah, just a lack of general understanding on kind of the big picture. Yeah. And some places I think do a better job of kind of being able to expose you to those. And then also some people do too. So yeah.
Yeah.
I think those are good points. Well, so one of the things that I wanted to ask you as well is, as you are diving deep into, you know, growing your following and also your analytics career and kind of evolving as an analyst and also someone who knows about data visualization, right now it's 2019 And I'm sure you've seen in the past couple of years, there's been a lot of changes and shifts over, you know, in the industry. And so, you know, where do you see the field of data visualization in the future going? And then also just more broadly, you know, maybe what are some trends you've also seen at, you know, within the world of data viz and, you know, where you think this field is kind of heading? How can people kind of help prepare themselves?
Okay. So this, this is an interesting point because I have been thinking about this quite a bit. Mm-hmm. We were speaking before the podcast that I'm actually advising Greensboro College on rolling out an analytics minor program, and I'm going to be teaching data visualization in the capstone course. Something that I think is going to be emerging, and it's already starting to emerge, is the middle to smaller market analyst. So if you're in a company that is $100 million or less, I think they are going to start getting more and more data savvy. And what's awesome in these kinds of situations is you can come in. So to give you some context about my history, mm-hmm. I went in to a company that was $100 million in revenue, and I built out their entire reporting infrastructure and automated it. So they hired me on as an intern in the last semester of my MBA to basically do something that was freshman level in undergrad. They wanted me to come in and pull in reports from Excel and build out pivot charts so that they can understand their demand planning. This is where the soft skills, the sales perspective comes in. I showed up to that interview with an alternative pitch and said, if you give me 3 months, I can automate this process. And I mean, I guess that's, I mean, I don't know, that might be a little bit out of the realm of most people's comfort zone, but I completely flipped that frame and said,
you sold yourself.
Right. Essentially.
Yeah.
But I mean, that I think is the next step. I think that is where there's a huge opportunity because I mean, I'm in Greensboro, North Carolina, and there's a bunch of manufacturers around here. Mm-hmm. They are not very privy to analytics. In fact, I would say data analysis is very low on their totem pole of priorities. So I would be open to exploring these smaller organizations. And I mean, I think just in general, the demand for analysts is growing like crazy. I actually just posted an article on LinkedIn about that, about how even the entry-level analysts are getting relatively high-paying jobs just because the supply-demand differential.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I mean, as you're describing with these organizations that are becoming more awake to the potential and possibilities of data, and you're seeing all these big acquisitions. In fact, I think it was just announced a few hours ago, as of this podcast, that Google just acquired Kaggle not too long ago. And I know that Salesforce has bought Tableau and Google has bought Looker. So all of these different, you know, the consolidating world, I think, is all about trying to build a grand vision of what analytics and what data can do and how it can be more accessible to and really turn people into citizen data scientists, you know, where you don't necessarily need to have a PhD, but you have to have a certain level of comfort with data because it's now everywhere. And even just being able to understand the impact that something that you're doing is making, I think the time of not really knowing is over. Because now you have opportunity and access to all of this information, and it's kind of going to be up to you or a team to really help you unlock that. So I couldn't agree more with the kind of the vision of where I kind of see that going.
Yeah, yeah.
So the last two questions that I have for you, this is something that I like to ask every guest that comes onto the podcast, is what is one piece of marketing technology, either tool, software, or process that you recommend that can kind of have a tangible impact on an organization or your work or even your personal life? And I will preface this by saying, I know we talked about Tableau a lot. So something besides Tableau, and it could be even like an app or anything along those lines that can help people do more work.
Well, can I say Google Analytics? A properly installed instance of Google
Analytics. Okay, a preface properly installed Google Analytics. Okay,
because talk more about that. What I'm noticing is that a lot of, well, okay, first I need to identify what a properly installed Google Analytics instance is. So you need to set up goals and conversions. But before you can do that, you need to understand what's the value of a lead for me. So you kind of have to start doing some thinking about, okay, if I land a deal that's worth $10,000, I'm willing to pay $500 per lead for this because I have a close ratio of X. So it kind of helps you think about how can I scale this up? What are the areas where I am, you know, having some success? Because with Google Analytics, you can track demographics, geographics, age, location, like all these different data points of how they're coming into your website. And then you can start to really narrow down on some like specific ads that target specific locations and specific age groups. And then that can help you get a much higher return on your marketing investment.
Yeah.
I mean, this is something that we're talking about. Yeah.
Yeah. I will definitely also second that. I think one of the components of Google Analytics is people think that you can put a line of code in there and it'll kind of be able to answer all your questions. But I think even a slightly more than deeper surface level implementation, I think is really critical because Google Analytics is great for a lot of different things. And I think it, you know, helps you understand the average and a lot of key metrics easily, but you have to really tailor it to your business. Or your organization. So I could not agree more about having a properly implemented either Google Analytics or, you know, some other analytics tool as being really critical.
And then you may want to stack Tableau on top of it because their UI is not very good for actually doing some data crunching.
That's right. Yeah. Tableau. There. Yeah. So Tableau and then, GA, both I think solid recommendations. And lastly, if you could send a message to yourself 10 years ago, what would you tell your younger self, either personally or professionally, of something that you've kind of learned on your journey?
Okay. So I'm going to bring this back to the soft skills thing.
Sure.
There's this new concept that it's not new to the world. It's new to me, called specific knowledge or specialized knowledge.
Okay.
And that is what you cannot learn from class. So your specific knowledge are the specific experiences that you've had stacked with your specific unique skill set. So for instance, I got that opportunity to work with that manufacturer because I sold myself, mm-hmm. which was built off of, you know, the sales that I did before my MBA program. So what I would tell myself 10 years ago is start to cultivate your own personal brand. Because I never really thought about personalizing my brand or like cultivating that in any way. I just thought about really just kind of getting through class. I mean, the reason I had to get my MBA was because I just kind of blew my undergrad. I didn't. Mm-hmm. I came out of my degree at UNCW in economics with zero hard skills.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's why I went into sales because I guess selling is a skill set. So, I mean, but I was kind of naturally gifted with that I can talk to people and I'm, you know, verbally fluid and comfortable in interpersonal interactions. But I would be a little bit more cognizant of actively cultivating the skills that would get me to where I wanted to be, like my ideal kind of existence, which I mean, I'm 30 now and I'm kind of on that path. So, I mean, I guess better late than never, although I mean, 30 is not that old, right?
I hope not, because I'm not too far ahead of you there. So I hope that I also didn't miss the boat. Yeah. And I think that's said well, and I believe that you're never too late to learn. And especially when you're in a field like this, that is rapidly evolving and changing. And I always see job applications. In fact, a couple of weeks ago, I was able to attend the Optimizely conference, Opticon. And the company has been around for about 10 years or so. And the CEO is on stage. And one of the things that he was talking about and he was doing was showing job applications and resumes and also people posting job postings of saying like, you have to have like 15 years Optimizely experience. And the CEO is like, I don't even have 15 years of Optimizely experience. And I think that goes with just how rapidly this field changes and how much it's evolving and how much it's growing. You have to be comfortable with growing and evolving with it. But I think that also forces you to also accept that you don't necessarily know everything. So again, it's about being vulnerable and really being okay with asking those questions and then letting those questions drive the impact you're able to have. So I couldn't agree more with that.
Yeah, cool deal.
Great. Well, John David, this has been a fantastic time getting a chance to chat with you and learn a lot more about not only just data analytics and data visualization, but also just how people can begin to approach analytics. And I know you are going to have some really fantastic courses out on LinkedIn for LinkedIn Learning. You also have Udemy courses as well that are currently focused a lot more on, you know, Tableau and data visualization. So I highly recommend that anyone out there that wants to learn those courses. I did not know John David before, but I learned actually a lot through Udemy courses and other online courses myself. And it's a really good way for you to get those skills, even though those are sometimes just the hard skills, also focusing on the soft skills, to get the skills for you to kind of take your career to the next level. So it's been a really amazing opportunity getting a chance to chat with you. And I'm really excited to see what you do next.
Oh yeah. Thanks.
Thank
you. Yeah, I really enjoyed it too.
Thanks, John David.
Yeah, see ya.
Thank you for listening to the MarTech Data Lab. Like the podcast? Don't forget to rate and review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen from. Visit martechdatalab.com to find additional resources to help you stay current on all things marketing, subscribe to the weekly newsletter, access the growing MarTech Vendor Compendium, and more. Drop Sam a line at sitin@martechdatalab.com and let him know what you want to hear about next. Happy stack building!